Part 1, Chapter 17, Two Figures in the Microcosm. A threefold phantom menaces the pupil at the beginning of the path, the phantom of the two persons or two existences in the microcosm. Every pupil wishing to tread the path of transfiguration will encounter this phantom in threefold guise. First, it will spread doubt within the pupil, doubt amongst other things regarding the nature of rebirth, as it is proclaimed and made possible by the universal doctrine, a doubt which is brought about in quite a natural way. Secondly, if doubt finds a favorable soil in the pupil, negation will gain power over him, so that thirdly, a threat will develop. He will threaten every servant of the universal doctrine and every activity of the bona fide spiritual school. He must threaten them out of fear and opposition, out of need and anger, because he wants to smother his own inner voice of the spirit spark atom. The light of the gnosis which shines into all hearts is a hindrance to such people. They will oppose it, try to extinguish it, but you no doubt sense how impossible this is. For this reason we told you that such a threefold activity can have but one end, suicide, the spiritual death of the misled pupil and his adherents, the coming to a head and acceleration of their dialectical demise. The tragedy of this drama in all periods of world history is so intense, so breathtaking, and alas, so utterly unavoidable for so many, that it is deemed necessary to speak about this in a cautionary and instructive manner. The teachings and explanations concerning the two existences in the microcosm have always belonged to the more clandestine side of the work of the Brotherhood. They were always passed on orally to those who needed them to find their way. However, in the eschatological period which mankind has now entered, many things which up to now were hidden must be revealed for the following reasons. A cosmic revolution renders the possibilities of success on the path infinitely greater and more manifold. Accordingly, the number of candidates will increase, and the work of the spiritual school will become more extensive. Whereas it was a question of single candidates, there will soon be thousands who must be helped. This situation means that from the places of service in the temples and in new literature, warnings necessary to pupils are passed on to all those able to understand them. The form of these warnings will prevent abuses and false reactions. The pupil must know then that there are three great hindrances to finding the true path. The first is our I-being and all the delusions of the material sphere. The second hindrance emanates from the reflection sphere and all the forces and entities active therein, whilst the third, and, to date, scarcely mentioned hindrance, emanates entirely from one's own microcosm and especially from its least known part, the auric being. This third hindrance exerts its full influence when the pupil threatens to escape the first two. The auric being is a field organized in a sevenfold manner, in which all powers and organs of the microcosmic firmament are present. Besides its readily conceivable spherical shape, this auric being also has the form of a personality, but a much larger personality than the earthly one which we know which we are. You will certainly understand that the auric personality is a being of light, and as this personality bears the organs of the Lipika, one can rightly speak in a certain sense of a heavenly being, a shining, sparkling, mighty being, 2 meters high at the very least, full of multidimensional splendor. Therefore, one must say that every microcosm possesses two personalities, an earthly form and an auric form. But this auric heavenly form, with its almost cyclopic stature, equipped with great abilities, must certainly not be confused with the original figure which must be born again in the microcosm and which will again be able to enter the original human realm, the immovable kingdom. Just as the earthly figure of the microcosm must be renewed by transfiguration, so too must this heavenly figure. In occult literature in particular, the auric personality is often referred to as the higher self, as the true man, as the God within us. And the pupil is induced to merge into perfect union with this higher self. Highly sensitive persons, or those with mediumistic characteristics from time to time, receive impressions from the higher self, or are occasionally confronted with it. In a state of mystical religious exaltation, the lower self is often overshadowed by the higher self. The ignorant imagine such overshadowings to be experiences of special divine grace, but in reality they see nothing other than their own auric prototypes. The well-known stigmatist Therese Neumann, who was quite at home with the Heavenly Virgin and was virtually worshipped as a miracle of the Church, was not the victim of an illusion or trick of the reflection sphere, but established a negative occult connection with her own auric being. This was her Heavenly Virgin. Experiences with Jesus, apparitions, etc., obtained in mystic exaltations, all have exactly the same cause. If you examine your own experiences on the basis of this information, you will probably arrive at the conclusion that you too have experienced the touch of this auric being at some time or other, that you too have seen or felt something of this sort. You will perhaps ask, where does the auric being obtain its splendor and glory? Why is it so mighty? What is its nature, aim, and being? Is that being good or bad? In order to obtain a satisfactory answer to these questions, you must consider everything the universal doctrine has imparted to you up to now concerning the auric being. The auric being is, amongst other things, a firmament of sense centers, power centers, and focal points. All these principles together form a unity, a flaming fire, a synthesis of great powers in which a certain fire has been kindled. One of the expressions of this flaming unity is a fiery, shining apparition in which we recognize the gigantic image of a human form, grotesque, magic, strangely imposing. Another expression of this huge fire is the small world arising within this firmament, the microplanet, terrestrial man, the lower self. We are begotten of this flaming auric fire. We are maintained by this fire. Thus, the auric form finds its reflection in our terrestrial form, but in turn is fed and maintained by the activity of our existence. It is therefore obvious that when we look up in exalted adoration to our microcosmic firmament, to our own microcosmic heaven, a response is sent by our own fire god from whom we originate and exist. It is equally obvious that if we want to tread the path of the true divine mysteries with the eye, with our own non-transfigured small world, the auric fire god will bar our way. For out of their mutual dependence follow the I, centeredness, and self-maintenance of the ordinary self, which entails making one's own lipika system the center on a basis of reciprocity. So there is indeed a God within us, the lipika being. It is our creator. We are its creatures. This creator can never relinquish his creature, for in their mutual dependence, the destruction of the creature means the destruction of the creator. In other words, although it has a form, the fire being in our own firmament in many respects possesses impersonality. It is bad when we are bad, it is good when we are good, and it will be broken up when we break up our own self in the process of endura. To say that we stand upon the path while this lipika being is still alive with all its old power is to lie. The fire being of the aura is the Lucifer of the mysteries, a name which in the light of the foregoing says everything. As a consequence of the microcosmic processes caused by the state of fall, an undivine hydrogen principle burns in oxygen in the lipika, whereby the rate of vibration is determined by nitrogen. Nitrogen is the retarding factor which enables the microplanet to manifest itself in lower terrestrial carbon. The microplanet perishes periodically, whereupon a new microplanet is born within the turmoil of the small field of manifestation. Yet the fire being remains. It absorbs all the results of the ever-changing microplanetary existence, and its form and organic structures bear witness to it and carry the marks of countless years. These characteristics of the microcosmic heaven change constantly, for through the action of the retarding factor, some fires are extinguished and others kindled, just as the ancient focal points of pre-Luciferian times have been dormant for aeons because they cannot burn in the unholy fire. The results of this state are manifested again and again in the little planet, namely of our unholy mortal being. Thus the whole system hurtles through space like a dark red flash, as if lost in the universe. Man, as a little planet, is accompanied and guided by his own Lucifer, his own Satan, his own nature god. But do recognize now that this nature god is in essence your subordinate, your servant, your dearest friend, your imitation, Jesus' apparition, your heavenly virgin, your master, for he serves you according to your wishes. You obtain what you order. If you invoke fire, you will burn. What you sow, you will reap. Everything you were and are is allotted to you by your Lipika being, by your higher self, by this degenerate projection of your true self, by this nature god within you. The Lipika being, which was never intended as the basis of existence of your life system, creates and maintains this system. Most people have made a tyrant out of this Lipika being, a fiery, diabolical monster, a nature god who avenges your misdeeds for so many generations. People then have every reason to fear this auric burden. Fear, immense fear, arose in this way. From fear arose natural religiousness and natural occultism, for people have good reason to reconcile themselves with their own so-called higher self, with this fire god, this bearer and radiator of their karma. You shed tears and subjugate yourself to your god and dream in your heart about seeking the path. You then emanate a certain meekness and mildness, of course. In such a state, you cultivate a certain degree of goodwill whereby, according to natural law, the stream of flaming fire is retarded. The cultivated meekness delays the advent of the disaster. The nature god has helped you. Occultism, too, is a method of creating a certain balance between the higher and lower self, of controlling the impersonal higher self by the lower self. In one's delusion, one then believes that nothing more can happen, for, as the deluded one says, then I myself stand at the helm and am able to steer consciously. But when the lower self and the higher self are united in this way, the whole being, as a microcosmic system, is hopelessly lost. All this could make you frightened, more frightened than ever before, but if you have understood what we are trying to tell you, all fear will leave you, for the auric being does not intend to kill you. Its activity will cause your destruction only when you provoke it yourself by continued self-centered life. If you hang yourself by a rope, is the rope the cause of your death, or is it you yourself who has committed the deed? If the true heavenly lights were once extinguished in your Lipika system, it must surely be possible to restore the old glorious firmament by a complete reversal of life. Therefore, just as there is a spirit spark atom in your heart, there is also a spirit spark principle in the firmament, like a latent dead sun. When a human child goes the way, as pointed out for years by the school of the transfiguristic mysteries, then the higher self is not invoked, the Lipika firmament is not appealed to. He no longer studies this firmament, astrological friends, but penetrates through this heaven burning in unholiness and lifts his eyes to the hills from whence his help comes. And this help does come. Thanks to the fact that one of the extinguished lights of the Lipika has been ignited to new glory, the spirit spark atom can be touched within the heart, whereupon the process we have so often described ensues. The spirit spark radiation reaches the blood via the thymus gland, and via this Jordan of life, it reaches the core of the Luciferian principle in the lower self, the nucleus of consciousness within the head sanctuary. When these two principles accept one another, Jesus is baptized in the Jordan. John, the purified natural, I recedes, and Jesus begins his three-year journey. This journey is the progressive touch of a corrupt microplanet by a holy power. In the mythology of the Bible, Jesus is represented as initially coming into the desert. Is not our earthly self a desert, where all that is true finds only aridity and wretchedness? Yet this entire desert must be struggled through by the Jesus radiation for 40 days and nights, an image of the totality of this struggle, of the chalice that must be emptied to the last drop. Perhaps you understand what happens now. The power of the new life touches our microplanet, and the interaction between the microplanet and the natural lipidifier is immediately disturbed. The equilibrium between nature God and dialectical man is disturbed. Now, when this dialectical man is impelled to his enduristic death, it inevitably also means the death of the nature lipica, the end of Lucifer, the end of Satan, of the nature God within us. You will therefore understand what happens at the beginning of the path leading from the desert to true life. The lipica, being with all its grandeur, with all its whole karmic treasures, with all its aeonic might, assails the candidate. That is why it is said, then Jesus was led by the universal spirit into the wilderness, and after he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he hungered for the end. And Satan came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." That is, by virtue of the new power of which you partake, you can transform, cultivate this nature, and make bread out of these stones. The higher self of this nature strives to hold the candidate back from his exodus from this natural order by tempting him to make the Luciferian nature palatable. But Jesus answered, "Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." Jesus resolutely rejects the lipica figure, which does nothing more than fulfill its natural mission. Then Satan took him to the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, "Now prove that you are a new man. Throw yourself down in proof that you have overcome the force of gravity. Prove your membership of the apostolic circle." But the proof of what is original cannot and may not be given on earth. Were the candidate to demonstrate his power, it would have no influence whatever upon earthly man. The latter would repudiate his state of being, and the candidate, by attempting to convince, would offer proof that he does not as yet rely upon his own power bestowed on him anew. Thus he would be testing the power of the gnosis, a purely dialectical check along the principle of safety first. As a response to this seductive attempt, the candidate therefore replies, "You shall not tempt the Lord your God." Again, Satan took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms and the glory of the dialectical nature, and said to him, "All these I will give you, if you fall down and worship me."
But the lipica being, now knowing its very existence to be absolutely unsafe, presents itself to him in all its splendor and power, offering him the highest attainable in dialectics. And now the candidate demonstrates his firm resolve, his total renunciation, even of the most sublime delusions, and says, "Begone, Satan, I shall serve the gnosis only." Summarizing, at the beginning of the true path, the lipica being directs an appeal at the three nature egos of the candidate. firstly to his old eye centrality, secondly to his old morality, thirdly to his old ideality.
If the new radiation of the gnosis in the blood of the pupil proves strong enough, Satan will recede from him, i.e., all the lights of the Luciferian Lipica will be extinguished, the form of the old higher self fades away, and the ancient, long-extinguished lights of the primordial man glow in the dawn of the new day. Like angels, they comfort and care for the emerging new microcosm. Therefore it is written, "Then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and ministered to him."